Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's time for the highly sought-after, fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
And welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. And as you guys know, and I've talked about this for years now, we were just talking about SEC Media Days, how quick it's coming this year, July 10th. I mean, right after the holiday, boom, we'll be down there 3 days at Hoover. And when you go up and down Radio Row, still today, you see more Phil Steele college football annuals out there on the desks of every radio station than you do anything else. And if it is not the magazine version, it's the electronic version. And now Phil's still doing more and more with ESPN. You're going to see him more than ever on ESPN this upcoming year. And thankfully, he still has time to join the Tom Abraham Show once a year or twice or three times if I can grab him. And he joins us now. Phil, welcome back. How are you, man?
Hey, I am doing great, Tom. Always good to hear your voice, my friend.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us as we break things down. And, of course, this college football season starts out, like many others, with a lot of talk about the SEC and quarterbacks in the SEC. What's your overall assessment of the league in terms of it being, if you will, down a little last year and maybe bouncing back over the next couple of years, especially with quarterback play when we look at all of these quarterbacks that are coming into the league?
Yeah, I think that's the key, Tom, is because last year when you looked at the quarterback play of the SEC, there was a lot of inexperience and, you know, a lot of up and down play from the quarterbacks throughout the year. And I think that that's why the SEC actually fell off its perch of, you know, the number one toughest conference in football and by far each on a yearly basis. But you look at the quarterbacks this year, you know, guys like Jalen Hurts now has experience. Nick Fitzgerald's a guy from Mississippi State that ran the option in high school. Looked pretty good as a passing quarterback, very dangerous runner as well. Jarrett Stidham comes in from Auburn. I think he's going to be a big-time upgrade for their quarterback position. LSU might actually have a quarterback in Danny Etling. And you go on and on right down the list of all the SEC teams. I mean, Kyle Shermer's back. Drew Locke is back. Steven Johnson's back for Kentucky. Bentley is back for South Carolina after playing what should have been his junior year in high school. They've got Jacob Eason. I think Florida's situation looks pretty good this year with Felipe Franks, Luke Del Rio, and now Malik Zaire. So we've got a lot more veteran quarterback play in the SEC. I think we'll have improved QB play. And there's a lot of big-time recruits coming in. They're going to push for time. So I'm bullish on both.
Yeah, and the Malik Zaire to Florida thing kind of threw me for a loop a little bit because I'm sitting here thinking, you're bringing in a guy who couldn't beat out the guy who went 4-8 at Notre Dame, and you know, Felipe Franks looked very, very good. He was a big time recruit. LSU thought they'd have him. Maybe their quarterback problems would have been solved if that happened. And Kyle Trask has looked good as well. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me if Felipe Franks is playing quarterback or if Malik Zaire is playing quarterback at Florida. It seems like they're in that same kind of Luke Del Rio kind of rut that they've been in.
Well, I think Zaire, when you look at the Notre Dame, I mean, the guy that he couldn't be out there turned out to be an NFL draft pick in the first round or in the second or third round, DeShone Kizer. And, you know, Zaire's a guy that I think they're using as a security blanket and veteran. Let's say that Del Rio isn't able to come back this year or isn't 100% to have him there. Because when you look at the rest of the supporting cast for Florida, They've got a much improved offensive line. They've got the best set of receivers I've seen there in years. And that's been surprisingly one of the weaknesses of Florida the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, been the receiver play. And then you look at the running backs, guys like Jordan Scarlett, Mark Thompson, P. Ryan, they've got a stable of running backs back there. The one piece missing is some quarterback experience, and Zaire's been in some big games and won some big games.
What do you think about the East then? Is it Georgia then Florida, Florida then Georgia, and is there anybody else that can push? Everybody was high on Tennessee last year. It looks like Tennessee may be a little bit worse this year than they were last year, but what do you make of the East?
Yeah, Tennessee's not as experienced as they were last year. If there's a team that's going to push the top two, I think it is going to be Tennessee. When I look at them, I do see 14 returning starters. They lose their quarterback, but they've got some talented guys in Quentin Dormady and Jared Garantino, and then they also bring in a Will McBride, a true freshman. They've got John Kelly back at running back. And remember last year, in the second part of the season, their defense was all banged up. They were giving up 45 points to A&M, 49 to Bama, 36 to Kentucky, right down the line, even 45 to Vanderbilt. I think the defense is going to have some bite this year, despite losing a couple of key players. They do draw LSU and Alabama out of the West. They do have to play Florida on the road. But they would be my sleeper pick in the East this year because they're under the radar. It's a place they haven't been last year. Georgia's my pick for second. When I look at Georgia, I do see Jacob Eason, who's going to be pushed by Jake Fromm at the QB spot. They've got Chubb and Michelle at running back. Defense has got 10 starters back. That makes them dangerous. But look at their schedule. They have to play Tennessee on the road, Florida in the swamp. They also have to play Auburn on the road this year. Non-conference, they have to play Notre Dame, Georgia Tech on the road. I think they slip up in a couple of places this year. And I'm going with the Gators to repeat. And I think this might be the best Florida team they've put on the field in recent years. Yes, they lose some talent on the defensive side of the ball, but much like Tennessee, their defense got banged up last year. That's why they gave up the 31 points to Florida State and the 54 to Alabama. And that got a lot of young guys some experience. A guy like Jabari Zuniga on the defensive end spot, I think, comes in and becomes a star along with C.C. Jefferson at the other defensive end spot. They're still loaded in the secondary. And offensively, it's the best offense I've seen out of Florida in years. And keep in mind, they've lost their starting quarterback early to injury each of the last 2 years. If they can keep the guy upright, whether it's Franks, whether it's Zaire, and I'm not discounting Luke Del Rio 100% either, because he was pretty good as a starter until he got injured last year. This is going to be a better Florida offense. Thing I really like about Florida this year is the schedule. Remember when they lost that LSU home game last year? Well, guess what? They get that game at home this year as opposed to playing it on the road. That's why LSU's playing 5 SEC road games. So Florida's 3 road games this year: at Kentucky, at Missouri, at South Carolina. Now, they do have to play Georgia and Jacksonville, but I think they have the talent to win that, and they've won the last 3 in that series. And when they play Michigan in the opening game of the season, Michigan's one of the least experienced teams in the country playing their first game. That's when you want to catch an inexperienced team. I think Florida has a shot at being favored in all 12 of their games this year. The Florida State game, the biggest question mark when they play them at home at the end of the year.
Yeah, that Florida-Michigan look-ahead line has been about 3 for Michigan from what I've seen. You think that could come down or maybe even turn over by the time the money starts rolling in on it?
I do think it will. It's plus 3.5 right now out there at the South Point in Vegas. And generally, Tom, my magazine does have a little bit of pull around the country. So yeah. Remember last year, my number one surprise team was the Washington Huskies, and they went from 7-6 and made the playoffs. This year, my number one surprise team in the country is the Florida Gators. So I got a feeling that game's going to be probably picked by game time.
Yeah. Well, let's move to the West. Phil Steele with us. Of course, Phil Steele's College Football Preview rolling out as we speak. You're going to start seeing the magazine come around. And folks can get the online version now, right, Phil?
Yeah, you can actually download it. And not only to your iPhone or your Android device, you can actually download it to your computer. So, I mean, it's really a neat thing to get. And if you go to philsteele.com, it gives you complete information of how to download the magazine. You can have it. You'd be reading the magazine in the next 5 to 10 minutes by doing it that way.
I'm still a page turner. I mean, does that make so me, much. You know, does it get off my long guy? I mean, I'm still a page turner. I want it in my fingers. I want to be able to flip the pages. I want to dog ear it. I want to use all of these sticky notes that I put in there for each team in the SEC and the Big Ten and ones that I'm talking about, ACC and so on. And so I still got to have the paper, Phil.
Yeah, you got to mark that puppy up. If you are a page turner, Tom, when you put it on your computer and you got it big like that, it actually looks like you're turning the page when you flip the pages. But
not the same.
I agree with you 100%. You got to circle the players that are gone, mark it up, make your notes, and by the end of the year, that thing's all dog-eared and ready for retirement.
Yeah, I know you're right, and I keep them, by the way, and my sons love them. It's cool, and I keep the old ones. I'm that way. I'm a little bit of a hoarder when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I got a shelf over there in the studio that has all the old Phil Steels because I like to try and catch it. You know, I like to go back and see where Phil screwed up. But year in and year out, you're right on the money, it seems like, in terms of your end-of-the-year predictions and your what the top 25 is going to look like and then what it'll look like when it comes time for the playoff.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. Put a lot of hard work into it. A good 6 months goes into producing the magazine each and every year. And then it's always good to get compliments like that.
Yeah. All right, in the West, speaking of look-ahead lines, Iron Bowl – last year, the look-ahead line from the South Point, I think, was 18 points. The game was 18 points. It was like, 30-12 or something. It was right on the money. This year, at Auburn, look-ahead line's 3.5 points. Has there been a 2-touchdown difference here in where Alabama is and where Auburn is?
Well, the biggest difference is probably at the quarterback play for Auburn coming into the season. And you look at Jared Stidham coming in. Now, do keep in mind, 2 years ago, there was a lot of hype on Jeremy Johnson for Auburn. Here's a guy, Heisman winner, best quarterback in the SEC, and things didn't pan out so well. But I do like what Jared Stidham brings to the table. He had some starting experience at Baylor. Great passer. He's got Petway and Johnson in the backfield. They also have a top-notch defense. In fact, when I look at Auburn, they've got my number 10-rated defensive line, number 14 linebackers, and number 11 DBs in the country. Solid on special teams at number 7. And last year at 1 point, remember Auburn was just blowing teams out. They beat Arkansas 56-3, Mississippi State by 24. They went into Ole Miss and won by 11. They were regarded as one of the top teams. They moved all the way up to number 8 after being unranked prior to last season. So I think that's part of the reason that Auburn was down there. Auburn got banged up down the stretch. They were hurting at quarterback when they played Alabama, hurting a little bit on the defensive side of the ball. But when you look at Alabama's schedule this year, if there's one game besides Florida State in the opener where you would say, hey, maybe they have a shot at losing it, it's got to be the Iron Bowl against Auburn. And that's, being a rivalry game, that's big as well.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Now, Vegas has Auburn as the second favorite, if you will, in the West. But the SIDs in the SEC put LSU there. What do you think about Ed Orgeron, his first full season as head coach there, and LSU with Darius Geis, an outstanding running back? Obviously, you like Etling. A lot of guys down here, not huge fans of him. But, what do you think about LSU or Auburn as the ones that could take a run at Alabama?
I think Auburn has the best shot this year. And, one of the things I look at is last year LSU did all that wrangling to get themselves that home game against Florida. And really it didn't matter. They had already lost to Alabama. They weren't going to win the West last year. But they got that game at home and ended up losing it to Florida. Well, now they got to pay the price. How about 5 SEC road games? I mean, they're playing Florida, Alabama, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Mississippi State all on the road this year. Tom, you ever recall a team playing 5 SEC road games?
No. No, it wouldn't happen. Yeah,
I don't think it's ever happened before. So here they are playing 5 SEC road games. They've got talent, no doubt. You look at the running backs. They've got one of the best set of running backs in the country, led by Geisman, number 4-rated offensive line. All 3 units on defense rank in my top 14. Special teams is solid. I just don't like that road schedule. So I went with Auburn second in the West. I'm going to agree with what Vegas has there. They've got 15 returning starters. I think they're going to be improved on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, Stidham, that's going to make a big difference. They do have to play LSU on the road, and they've lost, I believe, the last 7 in Death Valley, so that's going to be difficult. They have to play Clemson on the road. Clemson's going to be much better than people think coming in. In fact, Auburn's a 7-point underdog in that game. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the game against Alabama at home. But if anybody's going to knock off Alabama in the West this year, I believe Auburn's going to be that team.
Phil Steele with us. Everybody's looking for somebody other than Jalen Hurts, as the top quarterbacks when you rank them. I've seen him pushed down as far as 4. I've seen others say that he's the preseason number 1 SEC quarterback. He's the defending player of the year in the SEC. Is Jalen Hurts going to be a better quarterback, do you think, in 2017 than he was in 2016?
Yeah, well, generally what happens is almost when I look at quarterbacks, even 4-year starting quarterbacks, you look for the year of their biggest improvement. It's from year 1 to year 2 because that first year you're learning how to read defenses, you're younger, there's a lot of things going on, and generally when you get to that second year, you showed a lot of improvement. Now, Jalen Hurts, down the stretch, I mean, he was quite ineffective for Alabama in the last couple of games. But I think when you look at Hurts, now he's got the experience. He's got a veteran offensive line in front of him. He's got the best set of running backs in the country to hand off to. He's got my number five set of receivers. So the surrounding talent clearly there. The benefit of the experience is going to be big. Improved quarterback in Jalen Hurts this year. And I do have him first-team SEC.
All right, outside the league just for a moment, you take on the Bob Stoops deal. I mean, that happened after you went to press, and do you think that it's exactly what everybody is saying, or do you think there's something else going on here we're going to start learning stuff about?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I talked to Coach Stoops every year during the summer, but naturally I hadn't talked to him yet this year, and doesn't look like I'm going to, so I don't have any inside information on that. I respect Coach Stoops enough to you know, I'll just say that we'll take him at his word for what he's saying here. But I think as far as what happens to Oklahoma without Bob Stoops, with the timing of it, I love it. Because, you know, he got him through the spring practice. Coordinators are in place with Lincoln Riley, who now, of course, also the head man. They've got Mike Stoops on the defensive side of the ball. And then you look at the talent. Baker Mayfield, my number one offensive line in the country. And a lot of talent on the defensive side. They got some players over there like cornerback Jordan Thomas. And I think they're going to be an improved defense. And when you factor in their schedule, they'll be an underdog at Ohio State, but they'll probably be favored in all the rest of their games this year. So I don't think Oklahoma's going to miss a beat this year without Bob Stoops. And I'll tell you a little story about Lincoln Riley. It was about 3 years ago, Gil Brandt called me up. He says, you want to know one of the best young up-and-coming coaches? It's Lincoln Riley. And then sure enough, that summer he got a job at Oklahoma as the offensive coordinator. And he's definitely a coach that's on the rise.
You got an all-blue-blood Final Four, USC, Florida State, Ohio State, Alabama. A lot of people thought Alabama and USC last year could be a little bit of a preview of a playoff game. Now it's Alabama and Florida State as a preview of a potential national championship game, if you will. What are the chances those two teams are hooking up again in January?
There's a good shot, but I didn't call for it. And Florida State's overall schedule of the four teams you mentioned, Tom, I think that Alabama, Ohio State, and USC have an excellent shot at being favored in all 12 of their games this year. But Florida State, of the four teams, has got the toughest schedule to get there. I mean, they play Alabama in the opener, and yeah, they could lose to Alabama and easily make the playoffs. In fact, you expect that. The loser of this game could still easily make the playoffs. But they do have to play Clemson on the road, and they do have to play Florida on the road this year, both within a three-week stretch. So it's going to be probably the most difficult schedule of those four teams to get there is Florida State, and that had me keeping from calling them for getting back to playing Alabama again.
All right, Phil Still's college football preview. It's out. It's coming out. You can get it now at philstill.com. Go there, check it out. It's more information than you can possibly stand. If you're looking for, you know, a breakdown on who's got the best sideline food or cheerleaders, you're not going to find it at Phil Still's. What you're going to find is who's got all the best units in college football and who the best teams are, and that's why I love the guy. Phil, I appreciate you as always, man.
Hey, always a lot of fun talking to you, Tom, and look forward to doing it again for this football season. Have a great summer, my friend.
All right, man, you too. Phil Still, yeah, we'll have him back certainly coming up before September. All right, we'll get a break in here. We'll come back with more right after this. It's the Tom Abraham Show, 730, 1039, The Elm.
Hey, it's our time. Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867. Here's Tom Abraham.
Guest appearing, Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Now is the time to get into Woody Anderson Ford to take advantage of a great deal on a 2017 F-150. They're dwindling because the 2018s are on the way. And so you want to get in there and get a great deal right now on the hottest selling pickup truck in since, I don't know, ever. So you want to check that out. Now, when you go down there to Woody Anderson Ford, make sure you leave yourself a little time to maybe have breakfast or lunch at Henry's Mustang Cafe, which is tremendous, a full-service restaurant now. I'm not talking about a waiting room. It's a full-service restaurant. Now, if you need your car serviced, no matter what kind of vehicle it is, check out the new service lanes and so on at Woody Anderson Ford, right there at Jordan and Sparkman Lanes. Now, they're also, you'll notice all the work that's going on with the new showroom. They're still selling vehicles. Don't get confused by the trailers that are over there. Don't mind their dust. because the showroom's going to be ready about the same time the new football season is ready. So you want to get in there and check out Woody Anderson Ford. On the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline today, we had Stephen Gribben, Damon Amendola, Cole Kublik was in, Jordan Bianchi was in, Matt Rudy was in, and you just heard Phil Steele helping us with our countdown to Hoover. Eight shows. I said that going into that. I said I got eight shows left before SEC Media Days. That's because I'm off next week, and then we have the holiday, Monday and Tuesday, 4th of July, and then I'm back for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then July 10th, it's SEC Media Days. So for me, it's eight shows, now seven, starting tomorrow. And each day we're going to have a unique interview for you with somebody outside of our normal rota of guests. And that included Phil Steele today. So that's our countdown to Hoover. All right, right now, though, we put all our guests into the mixer. And this is your Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind. Yeah, I see. My sense was, as it happened, is we'll never see a par 72 again. I mean, it's obsolete, and it's not about yardage. And one thing that I love, and keep in mind that my favorite golf course in the world that I've played is Harbortown, okay, which you know is a shot makers type course. It's not a real long course, but length is just so meaningless. And when you look at this course, 15, which was 357 yards, was there was only six birdies on 15 yesterday. And 18, which was 683 yards, was the easiest hole on the course. Length is meaningless. I wish they would just look at it and say, you know what? It's shot making. Let's have more risk reward short par fours and 570 yard par fives with water at a creek at 300 yards off the tee and things like that. Make these guys think you don't have to hit 14 drivers. And
to understand something, Tommy, it would have been that way had they chosen to not cut the high stuff back on Wednesday. They cut it back a bunch on Wednesday because they start to get overly nervous on lost balls and how slow it would play. It's a long walk. You got 600 acres there. It's a long walk, and they had to keep track of that. And they had to keep track of the time. And to that standpoint, again, I think they did a good job, and I don't think they're going to try and compare it to anything else. I honestly agree with you that I don't think you're going to see a lot of par 70. You're not going to see a lot of 72s. You're going to see a lot of 72s that they turn into 70s. Right. And again, as you said, the short holes end up being the best holes. And I love that. I love it. I think it's great. I mean, look at what happened on yesterday. You got Bruce hitting a 3-wood, 5-iron into a 670 yard hole.
Right. Yeah. And that was just nuts with some of the length. See, the other thing that I'm thinking about, just to, overall for the game, look, in NASCAR, they drive Chevys Chevy, Ford, and Toyota, but that isn't a Chevy, Ford, or Toyota that you drive. And in other sports, they have, so to me, I really wish that they would, you could still have the different manufacturers of the balls. If a guy wants to play a Strixon or a Titleist or whatever ball. But I wish they had a tour ball. I wish they had a ball that had tour specifications, tons of spin. Because we love to see these guys control the ball and move the ball and stuff. But take some of the distance off of it, because I just think the game is—they're playing such a different game that we can't even relate anymore. Why can't they dial the ball back 20%, make it 80% of the ball we buy on the shelf? Who cares? And watch these guys, make shots instead of just bombing.
The answer, Tommy, is because you are a real golfer, and if you ask the average person, they will always choose to watch John Daly over Brad Faxon. And that's what they want. And because that's what they want, I don't have a problem with distance anymore. And I mean that because I don't care if they build 8,000-yard golf courses. The best players, you still had short hitters. I don't care what anybody says. Harmon is not a long hitter in the golf ball. It's just the nature of the golf course itself that allowed him to be. But I don't have as much of a problem as I used to. I used to be on your side of that, of changing the golf ball, and I'm not as much anymore. I think that the PGA Tour itself does a great job of making sure they get all the different kinds of golf courses.
Yeah.
And in the past, for so many years, the USGA went to golf courses that that everybody had a chance to win. It didn't matter. You know, this was this is a different story. Bethpage Black is a different story. Bethpage Black is a story where you have to be a power hitter to win the golf tournament. There's no way around it.
Well, it's not that they're even not having multiple, you know, winners, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and, you know, Dustin Johnson, these kind of guys, Rory, who's kind of fallen off quite a bit. It's not it that they're not winning multiple. They're missing the cut. I mean, Tiger and Jack never missed the cut. I fully expected, to be honest with you, after the top three players in the world missed the cut on Friday, I fully expected that Fox would, like, move this to FS1 or put it on, you know, the Fox movie channel or something like that. I mean, I had to be sitting there thinking, are you really? Are you kidding me? And I still don't know who some of those guys, and I do follow golf, and they're like, who are these people? If it wasn't that Justin Thomas was a Crimson Tider, you know what I mean? That was something to follow down in our neck of the woods. So you're following that guy for that. But, you know, I don't know who a lot of these guys were that were in the top 20, much less the top five.
Yeah, so it's the opposite Tiger effect.
Yeah.
It's, you're right, it has developed younger guys who stay in shape, that don't look like your dad, that don't look like a normal golfer used to be. So they're more athletic, they're younger, they're kind of more of, they're better prepared to have success early. But at the same time, there's no dominance whatsoever. And when guys like you're talking about Jordan Spieth and Rory and Jason and all these other guys, Dustin Johnson, when they're not in the mix, it really shows this like incredible lack of star power that golf has right now, because Tiger's obviously gone and Phil is like, will he, won't he, you know, he's getting up there in age. You can't really count on him for too much longer for majors. So it's a very odd time to me in golf. It might be, even though we've got Jordan Spieth, and even though we've got some marketable guys, it feels like an in-between bubble right now.
Yeah, exactly. Damon Amendola with us, CBS Sports Radio. All right, let's move on to another big story from over the weekend, that the Paul George telling the Indiana Pacers that he's gonzo after next year, which is a really odd thing, which means go ahead and trade me now, I guess. And not only is he gonzo, he makes it sound like he knows where he's going. I'm going to the Lakers. Really? I mean, is that just an automatic thing? I don't know. A lot of conversation, though, about Paul George to Cleveland and the Cavaliers. And the only way that happens is probably in a trade for Kevin Love, which is a front court guy for a back court guy. I mean, would the Cavs be that much better? Forget about the regular season and the playoffs. Would they be that much better to compete with the Warriors if you have Paul George in place of Kevin Love, or is it a bit of a wash in a way?
I think they're better. I think they're better if they had Paul George, because Paul George, I think, can be a better third option scorer than Kevin Love. And I think, most importantly, he can be a lockdown defender. He can be your primary defender. So if you tackle a team like the Warriors, or you tackle a team like the Spurs with Kawhi or whatever that's going to be in the NBA Finals, you can put Paul George on their best offensive weapon, and then that alleviates pressure off of LeBron. And then Kyrie is not really all that good defensively, so it helps you out there. And let's face it, the NBA Finals, one of the biggest problems with the Cavs was that they simply couldn't get stops when they absolutely needed it. That, I mean, you look at the point totals that the Warriors had in those five games, it was obnoxious. So, and they were outside of the top 10 defensive efficiency all season long, and no NBA champion's ever been that, or at least not in a long time. So I think it makes them better. You definitely have to ask the question, would it make them much better if you've got to trade away Kevin Love? The most important question, though, is even if the Cavs wanted to do it, do they have enough to give away? I mean, they can trade Kevin Love, but are the Indiana Pacers going to take back Kevin Love and then nothing else to give away their franchise? Because the Cavs don't have draft picks. They've traded all of those away. They don't have young players. They don't have young assets. They don't have anything anybody would want besides Kevin Love. So I don't know if that's going to be enough to get it done. I assume that the Cavaliers won't have the best offer out to the Pacers at some point.
Cole Kublik with us here. I got Phil Steele coming up later on. I know you have a great deal of respect for Phil, because of the amount of work that he puts into his publication, and you're not going to find that in his publication, the best food in the SEC and the best sideline attire by the cheerleaders and things like that. It's all hardcore football stuff. But from talking to Phil to setting this thing up, sounds like he's really, really high on Florida. And I don't mean just out of the SEC East. He's got Florida, his surprise team. Last year, his surprise team was Washington. I know you've been looking at the electronic version of the magazine. He's got Florida as a surprise team in college football this year. Your reaction to that?
There are parts of me that believe they are quarterback away. You know, Callaway and company, they're a legitimate receiver. They're loaded at running back with Thompson and Scarlett, and they have different style backs. So that helps. Tight end positions in great shape with Goolsby and those guys. They have pass catchers. They have blockers. The offensive line is probably the most talented in the SEC. Actually, I would say it is the most talented in the SEC. T.J. McCoy is the most physical center in the SEC. Juwan Taylor would probably be my second, at worst, third pick at tackle if we're drafting tackles in this league. Martez Ivey has all the ability in the world. He just hadn't put it together yet. The people saying they think he's going to be a first-round draft pick after this season are silly because he hadn't played great football. But the ability and talent is there up front. Defensively, linebacker's a bit of an issue. Secondary looks fine. Even though you lost a couple guys, they're still going to have dudes there. They had them last year. And I think Taven Bryan and Kari Clark and CeCe Jefferson are going to be just fine up front. That defensive line will not miss much of a beat. And they've lost big-name guys each the last 3 years. But the D-line's going to be just fine, and that's a great place to start. Now, Randy Shannon takes over as D coordinator. Jeff Collins, the head coach at Temple, so that changes things. But at least they have options at quarterback. And I think just quarterback consistency is going to be big for them. Because you look at what's happened to Mac his first few years. I mean, he catches fire with Will Grier. Things are rolling right along, and then he gets suspended. Del Rio looks like he's going to be able to manage things last year. He gets banged up, can't go. They got to turn it over to Appleby. So they haven't been able to find consistency at quarterback. I mean, he's had to go with a fifth-year with a graduate transfer from Purdue and a slot receiver the last 2 years, and he's won the East both times. So we know Matt can coach. If they can find a quarterback to just keep them in games, move the ball, understand field position. And by the way, they got one of the best kickers in college football, which I'm not big on talking about kickers, but Pinheiro is a weapon. And I think he's going to be every bit of what Daniel Carlson will be for Auburn this year of once you cross the 50, you got a chance at points. And that's a nice place to be as an offensive coordinator or play caller. So I like Florida right now in the East. They would be my East champion. Linebacker, offensive line depth, who the first five is going to be on the offensive line and quarterback would be my big question marks. Plus, look at that Florida schedule. There are some other SEC schedules that look a lot better than that one. I mean, opening up with Michigan, Florida State in the non-conference, they get LSU from the East. So it's not as nice looking to say a Kentucky schedule, that's for sure. Yeah. Maybe not even Tennessee with Georgia Tech, Alabama, LSU. I mean, they're not one of the easier schedules in the SEC East. So that's what I turn to. It's one of the reasons I think Kentucky finishes top three in the East. But Florida would be my pick right now.
A lot of talk about, obviously, the stage racing this year. And as Junior said, look, stage racing is just about having more restarts so that because TV likes restarts and so on. Okay, fine. Why don't we just have a final stage that's 20 laps? I mean, why don't we just get done with it? I mean, that's what we want, right? Why don't we just stop screwing around with this thing? And why don't we just have a final set? Or even better, clear the track of all the rim riders with 40 to go. You know what I mean? It just like you need to be in the top 20. With 40 to go, you want to see some racing to get into that top 20. You got to be in the top 20 with 40 or 50 laps to go, or 50 miles to go, depending on the track. And everybody else get the hell off the track, and we'll go the last 50 mile sprint to the win. How about that?
I don't mind the idea. It's fun, and if you're going to do this kind of thing where you're going to make the format more conducive to the television viewing audience, then make it conducive. Let's make it exciting at least. Let's shorten up the races. Let's have a 50-lap sprint featuring 20 guys. That would get people excited. And I think, as you said, if you want to get people or you want to get drivers and encourage them to race harder and really start taking chances, look what they would do at the end of that second-to-last segment trying to get into the championship round or whatever you want to call it. No. That would be interesting. That would be fun. It's an idea. And I'll tell you what, the people I've spoken with, there are going to be some changes to this format. They are open to ideas. They like the basis of it. They like having the stages and everything. They're going to tweak this a little bit because they realize that this format is proving popular. It's enhancing the competition. And if they can do other tweaks to it to kind of make it better, they're certainly going to do that.
Well, you got to improve. You got to improve it near the end, then, instead of having a contrived deal. You know, have it where you have that shootout for the end of the race, and then that's another sponsor you can have. You know, you can have each race has a shootout at the end for the top 20 cars for the last 50 laps or 50 miles or whatever it is, whichever is less. And you know, and you call it the shootout, and it's brought to you by Sunoco. It's the Sunoco shootout. You know, at the end of the race, anything they can sponsor, they'd be happy with.
You can throw a sponsor in there. It makes it exciting, and it's kind of, you know, I hate to use the cliche, but you always hear people talk about, well, for a basketball game, you don't got to turn it into the final 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. You might have that cliche with NASCAR where, you know what, I don't need to turn it into that final segment, the last 20 laps, because I know they're really going to get crazy. It's not the worst idea. I like it. There's actually some merit to it. If you're going to make all these changes towards TV and that's what you want to do, then do it and do it right.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe it's a different thing for the points, you know, in that, and maybe you will secure – whatever points that you secure in those first, 250 laps or whatever it is, 250 miles, 350 miles. And then at the end, you know, there's 10 more points that are on the line, which are enough points to make it racy, but not enough to make you not want to go for it because you don't want to blow the whole day, you know, that you might have done. There was 10 lead changes, but there's only four guys, right? It was Larson, Truex, Bush, and Keselowski were the only guys that led in this entire race.
Yeah, and it, let's be honest, it wasn't the best race. I mean, the last 20 laps were pretty entertaining, but before that, there really wasn't much going on. It was a track position deal. It was one of those races where if you got out in front, you were going to be able to kind of run away. We saw it with Truex. We saw it with Larson. We saw it with Kyle Busch. It wasn't the best race, and Michigan's just not one of those racetracks anymore that's a good product, and you're starting to see that. The attendance yesterday continued to be down from past years. And it's a race that it's not a race that excites people anymore. It's a big deal for the manufacturers because it's in their backyard. But other than that, it's really not a big deal.
Okay, finally, Brooks Koepka, your take on him now. We have seen different kinds of winners. We think Dustin Johnson's going to be a great player, although he missed the cut. Jordan Spieth has slipped quite a bit. We've also seen Justin Rose and Webb Simpson and Lucas Glover and Jeff Ogilvy, you know, all win in the last 10 or 12 years. On the U.S. Open, and then they really don't do much after that. Is Brooks Koepka a guy who's got more majors in him, more championships in him, or is he going to end up in this Webb Simpson, Lucas Glover category?
He's a stud, and I think what you saw on Sunday is proof. I think if you put a heart monitor on him and on all the way around the course on Sunday, it wouldn't have changed. He was calm, played his scene, didn't get rattled. The moment wasn't too big for him, and when he was tied for the lead, on the back nine, he made three birdies in a row, and he just took the tournament away. And the difference between, you know, the guys that grinding out and win a major here and there, and the guys that take it from everybody else, that's a big difference on the tour. He's a guy that can take it from other players, and that, to me, that's a sign of someone who's going to win more majors.
Well, we're still looking for studs. I mean, we think we got studs. Dustin Johnson's fun to watch, and Rory, you know, but studs don't miss the cut in majors in their prime, you know. And
oh,
I think golf
is. He got a kid on Monday. Come on.
All right. Well, having a kid on Monday, I guess, is one thing. But I'm just saying, you know, in general, when you think of the great players, we always have that, you know, that generational player, whether it's Arnie or Jack or Tiger or whoever those guys are. In their prime, they don't miss cuts. We had all three of the top three players in the world miss the cut, and Jordan's kind of fading a little bit. I don't know what the story is there. The guy's one of the best putters in the world at 10 and 12 foot putts, and it seems to be 4 and 5 footers are driving him nuts. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, who really emerges here.
And I think the problem with Spieth is he doesn't have the horsepower those other guys have. So if he has an off week putting, he doesn't have the horsepower to hit those 325-yard tee shots and give himself more chances. I mean, he has to be, you know, like Zach Johnson. He's got to be right up there, you know, with precision on the parts of his game that are the best. And to me, if you're asking who the studs are, I think the group is becoming pretty well defined. I think it's Dustin Johnson. I think it's Rory McIlroy. I think it's Jason Day, and I think it's Brooks Koepka. I think it's big, powerful guys, and you're going to see someone like Thomas Peters in that group pretty soon. John Rahm, Thomas Peters, those are the prototypical modern players who are going to be overpowering golf courses.
What do you think about the East, then? Is it Georgia, then Florida, then Georgia, and is there anybody else that can push? Everybody was high on Tennessee last year. It looks like Tennessee may be a little bit worse this year than they were last year. But, you know, what do you make of the East?
Yeah, Tennessee's not as experienced as they were last year. If there's a team that's going to push the top two, I think it is going to be Tennessee. When I look at them, I do see 14 returning starters. They lose their quarterback, but they've got some talented guys in Quentin Dormady and Jared Garantino, and then they also bring in a Will McBride, a true freshman. They've got John Kelly back at running back. I remember last year, in the second part of the season, their defense was all banged up. They were giving up 45 points to A&M, 49 to Bama, 36 to Kentucky, right down the line, even 45 to Vanderbilt. I think the defense is going to have some bite this year, despite losing a couple of key players. They do draw LSU and Alabama out of the West. They do have to play Florida on the road. But they would be my sleeper pick in the East this year because they're under the radar. It's a place they haven't been last year. Georgia's my pick for second. When I look at Georgia, I do see Jacob Eason, who's going to be pushed by Jake Fromm at the QB spot. They've got Chubb and Michelle at running back. Defense has got 10 starters back. That makes them dangerous. But look at their schedule. They have to play Tennessee on the road, Florida in the swamp. They also have to play Auburn on the road this year. Non-conference, they have to play Notre Dame, Georgia Tech on the road. I think they slip up in a couple of places this year. And I'm going with the Gators to repeat. And I think this might be the best Florida team they've put on the field in recent years. Yes, they lose some talent on the defensive side of the ball, but much like Tennessee, their defense got banged up last year. That's why they gave up the 31 points to Florida State and 54 to Alabama. And that got a lot of young guys some experience. A guy like Jabari Zuniga on the defensive end spot, I think, comes in and becomes a star along with C.C. Jefferson at the other defensive end spot. They're still loaded in the secondary. And offensively, it's the best offense I've seen out of Florida in years. And keep in mind, they've lost their starting quarterback early to injury each of the last 2 years. If they can keep a guy upright, whether it's Franks, whether it's Zaire, and I'm not discounting Luke Del Rio 100% either, because he was pretty good as a starter until he got injured last year. This is going to be a better Florida offense. The thing I really like about Florida this year is the schedule. Remember when they lost that LSU home game last year? Well, guess what? They get that game at home this year as opposed to playing it on the road. That's why LSU's playing five SEC road games. So Florida's three road games this year: at Kentucky, at Missouri, at South Carolina. Now, they do have to play Georgia and Jacksonville, but I think they have the talent to win that, and they've won the last three in that series. And when they play Michigan in the opening game of the season, Michigan's one of the least experienced teams in the country playing their first game. That's when you want to catch an inexperienced team. I think Florida has a shot at being favored in all 12 of their games this year. The Florida State game, the biggest question mark when they play them at home at the end of the year.
Yeah, that Florida-Michigan look-ahead line has been about three for Michigan from what I've seen. You think that could come down or maybe even turn over by the time the money starts rolling in on it?
I do think it will. It's plus 3.5 right now out there at the South Point in Vegas. And generally, Tom, my magazine does have a little bit of pull around the country. So yeah. Remember last year, my number one surprise team was the Washington Huskies, and they went from 7-6 and made the playoffs. This year, my number one surprise team in the country is the Florida Gators. So I got a feeling that game's going to be probably picked by game time.
So there you have it. That is your Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind for this, the 19th of June, 2017. We'll come back, tell you what to watch on TV tonight and get it wrapped up right after this on 730, 1039. We're not on VNN. We're on 730, 1039, yum.
The Tom Abraham Show is back. Listen at your own risk.
Just sit right back and you'll hear it.
Now for What to Watch on TV tonight, brought to you by Bankston Motorhomes. Bankston is still registering people to win any new RV from their inventory of over 500 new travel trailers, fifth wheels, motorhomes. Winner to be announced in November. All you got to do is go to their website, BankstonMotorhomes.com, click on the Enter to Win button, and then guess the winning Alabama driver's license number, which is locked away safely in a vault until November. If no one guesses the correct driver's license number, then the person with the closest guess will win a $1,000 gas card. You know, Bankston has the largest selection of pre-owned RVs in the southeastern U.S. with almost 200 used RVs in stock. They'll surely find one to fit your budget. Bankston Motorhomes. .com is the website that features more pictures of the actual units in stock than any other RV dealer in the Southeast. And they got more pictures for customers to check out than the manufacturers as well. So check those out at BankstonMotorhomes.com. All right, what do you want to watch tonight? I mean, it's that time of year. I mean, it gets a little bit weird. We've got the College World Series. So you've got the Oregon State and LSU playing tonight. So that's an important game in the College World Series. You might want to check that out. Also, that's on ESPN, by the way, and it'll be followed by the Tigers at the Mariners. So a little Major League Baseball there. Also, of course, you have got the Atlanta Braves, the Hotlanta Braves, coming up tonight. Braves, man, playing some pretty good baseball. Coming up at the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour, you'll hear it right here on the Ump. You can watch it as well, Fox Sports South, Atlanta, and San Francisco. Atlanta now 31-37, coming off of winning that last series against Miami, take on a San Francisco team that really they should win this series, 26-45. San Francisco is horrific. So look for Atlanta to continue its decent play, certainly. What else do you want to look at? How about the NBA mock draft special on ESPN2? We're going to be spending a lot of time over the next couple of days. There's a lot going on right now. Not only was there that huge trade with the first pick overall between the 76ers and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics aren't done yet. Look for them to try and put together a package to try and get Jimmy Butler. The Cavaliers are trying to get Jimmy Butler. It's a lot out there right now. Teams are angling and making deals and so on. There's going to be a lot of deals taking place in the next couple of days. We're going to cover it the best that we can for you as well. MLB Network has the Indians at the Orioles or the Reds at the Rays. Probably the Indians at the Orioles is where we're getting. And on the SEC Network, you can watch the Texas A&M spring game. Our friend Cole Kublik was there. They might want to check that out. Bachelorette on ABC. Dudes don't watch that, though, right? I mean, you know, come on. Bachelorette, really? American Ninja Warrior on NBC. See, it's garbage time. It's garbage time for TV now. You Think You Can Dance on Fox? Garbage time. I'll be watching whatever we got on the DVR with the Junkyard Bay. That's going to do it for us. Mixing the show expertly was Antonio McBath. I'm Tom Abraham. We'll be in studio, that studio, in Athens tomorrow. Stay tuned. That ought to be fun. Right here on 730-1039. Yeah.